Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering, but our goal is to help provide healing, hope, and education to the community. Hello, and welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Sydney Rashidzada, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Miss April Rutledge. Say hi there.
Hello. Hi, Sydney. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Just coming off of a fun fall break filled with lots of driving in cars, but it was fun, but we drove a lot. We went to South Padre, and we went on the beach and in the waters and in the airs, and it was fun. I parasailed for the first time. That was exciting.
Oh.
That was fun. And I know, April, you said that you just stayed local, had a little staycation.
Yes. Staycation and some sleeping and some cleaning. Super exciting.
That sounds fun. Speaking of fun, our guest is super fun, and he is a member of the Kids Joining Eternity board. This is part of our Meet the Board series for Kids Joining Eternity, and I really enjoy this person a lot, and he's super, super nice because today is his birthday.
So, happy birthday!
He's joining us on his birthday, and his name is Mr. Daniel Nash. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, and thank you very much.
Happy birthday. I hope you've had a good day so far.
I have. It has been a very busy day, but a very good day.
Well, sometimes I feel like it's best, especially when you're, you know, just to get, as you get older. And I know you're really old. You're 60 today, right?
61.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. Doesn't he look great for 61, April?
I was like, there's no way. I thought you were like 38, 40.
He is. I'm just kidding. He's not 61 years old. I'm messing with you.
I was like, thank God, you look amazing.
No, I am totally messing with you. And I love the fact there was a moment and he just went with it. But thank you so much for joining us on your birthday and for...
Although I'm not sure if I should be offended by April actually thinking I'm 61 or...
No, she didn't. She didn't believe it for a hot... She was incredulous. She was incredulous. She had no idea... really, you shocked her. You look great. And I'm happy that it's your birthday, and I'm happy that you've chosen to spend part of it with us, and to, more than that, though, to share your story, you and your wife Nicole's story. And with that, I would love for you to share your story with us and our listeners.
All right. Well, my wife Nicole and I got married in 2010. We decided we would wait for kids until after she finished law school, and we moved. That was when we were living just outside of New York City.
Nice.
So we moved back home because I'm from here. I currently live about 2 miles from where I grew up, and then Nicole's, most of her family's from Oklahoma City, so we moved back into the Oklahoma City area and then worked on paying off law school.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we had that pretty well under control, we decided, all right, let's start trying for a kid. We got pregnant. She got pregnant pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then I traveled normally around the state for work. Actually, let me back that up. We found out around middle of November that she was pregnant. And then, so we went in, she did the, you know, normal test. Yay, you're pregnant. Like, come back in a week and do another round of tests. We go back in a week, and about the next day they call and say, I'm afraid you're not pregnant.
Mm.
And basically one of the tests that should have gone up was... So far, it was almost zero. And even on a normal, I think it's like 10 or something. I don't even remember what test it was. And so they're like, come in, so, you know, have you had any bleeding? Come in, let's check, make sure you haven't had a miscarriage or anything. So we she immediately starts breaking down crying. We go in, have an ultrasound. There's a little heartbeat. Everything's just fine. What we ended up guessing is the lab screwed it up because they ended up redoing that test and it was right back to where it was supposed to be for. So someone was probably out there thinking they were pregnant and they weren't. Hopefully not, but we had that scare. But it ended up being a bit of a blessing because during that ultrasound, they realized she had some kind of hemorrhage. I don't remember all the technical terms. It's been 7 years.
Yeah. So chronic hematoma?
That's it.
Leave it to April.
Chronic hematoma, yes. So she was on rest, and we'd go back every few weeks and get it checked, and it kept going down and down. So, and by the, I think around 19 weeks when we found, when you can find out the gender, I think it was basically gone and had dissipated, and everything was good. We decided, don't tell us the gender. It's our first. We want it to be a complete surprise. And then, so that was about beginning, end of February, beginning of March. At the end of March, I had to make a, one of my very rare out-of-state trips. So I drove up to Kansas City for work. I was up there on that Monday. And then Monday night, she called, said she was, she didn't feel right. So she went to the doctor's office. Unfortunately, the doctor didn't look at her. The nurse came in and just said, oh, it's probably Braxton Hicks. Here's some heavy sedation pills and sent her home. Not realizing that her sac had ruptured and she could actually feel the urine sac. And so she went home, fell asleep. You know, medication just knocked her out. And then about 2 o'clock, she woke up and she's like, no, this isn't right. These are not. So she called her best friend because I was staying, like I said, up in Kansas City. She called her best friend who drove, came over, grabbed her, drove her to the hospital. They're like, we're not equipped. You know, it was like just a women's hospital. They're like, we're not equipped for this, and sent her over to Integris, where they tried to slow it down, but by, you know, that time, it was, your baby's going to end up coming, so they started prepping for an emergency C-section. I got a call once I actually was able to wake myself up enough in the morning to drive. I headed home. I think that's, Kansas City to Oklahoma City is normally like a 5-hour drive. In a company truck that guzzled gas that I ended up having to stop and refill, I still made it in under 4.5.
Wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I figured anybody wants to stop me, they can, and I'll let them know exactly why.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Halfway through the drive, I started getting messages of, she had the C-section. He was born at 1 pound, 8 ounces on Tuesday, March 29th. Immediately, you know, transferred to the NICU. So I went, parked my truck, work truck at the house, jumped in the personal car, drove to the hospital, and then we went and saw him. And we ended up in the hospital with, in the NICU for 10 days. You know, anybody who's been in the NICU will tell you it's a roller coaster. You get your highs, then you get your lows. You get your highs, and you get your lows. We always, you know, thankfully they told us and warned us, hey, don't get too high on the highs. They're great.
Yeah.
But if you get too high on the highs, you end up riding that low really low.
Yeah.
And Nicole can tell you a lot more. My memory is just not worth anything. But, I mean, he did well. He was always under like bilirubin lights, so he had a little, he never opened his eyes because he was 24 weeks when he was born. He was 16 weeks early. He never opened his eyes, but even though they always put like little sunglasses on him, under the bilirubin, and I'm a 80s kind of music person, so it always came in and we'd always sing Corey Hart's I Wear My Sunglasses.
I was gonna say, I bet you,
yeah. And so he ended up having rupture in his lung. So they had put in a tube for that, and then that started getting better. And right about the time it was, okay, maybe we can, you know, we're looking good after, you know, about a week or so. Maybe we can, you know, try like dropping, you know, a little bit of mom's breast milk in, you know, let him get that help. And he had a rupture in his small intestine. And so they had to go in for that. And then, you know, part of it was also, I think, he never wanted the machine to breathe for him. He was always trying to be the big, strong boy and breathe on his own. And it was the night before he passed, they called and said he had a grade 4 brain bleed. And so, you know, of course, we WebMD it, you know, start Googling and, you know, start having to say, okay, hey, this was 10 or 11 at night. And so told my wife, you're not going to do any good if you're, you know, this tired, get some sleep. We'll go up first thing in the morning. And so we went up the Friday, April 8th, and went in, and they showed us a scan of basically, here's what it was. Here's what the brain blade made it look, you know, what happened with, you know, and it just, it seeing that picture of a picture of someone's brain having a grade 4 brain bleed, especially at his age, not small, you just kind of understand there's no recovery from that.
Yeah.
They're giving him 100% oxygen and you can't get a pulse ox above 80. It's not. And it's one of those that, okay, even if by some miracle he did recover, most likely he wasn't going to have a quality of life that you would want. So, you know, we called at that point, up until that point, we had basically said, hey, it's just her and I. He's 24 weeks. He's susceptible. He's so small. And maybe it was a little bit selfish. We wanted all the time we could get with him because we knew the risk of being that early. And it's one of the things the nurses said to us was, unfortunately, white males do the worst in the NICU, the wimpy white boy club.
Yep.
We kind of had, you know, and that's, we really appreciated the nurses not ever sugarcoating anything. They always told us the truth, but always made sure to do it in a way that, you know, it wasn't hurtful or anything. It was just, hey, we want you to be prepared.
It was compassionate. We're going
to get 100% of our effort to make this a positive outcome.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you going
to
say?
No, I just said that's the compassionate. They were just really compassionate. So, I mean, I feel like when Mina was in the NICU, I did not get a lot of realistic, and maybe I did and I just blocked it out and I don't remember it, but I don't feel like anyone ever, not until the very end did they explain to me, like, at this point, like, if she makes it, she's not going to be the daughter you brought home, which is fine, but thankfully, I think, like you, I didn't have to make a decision. It was, the decision was made. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, so not sustained. It was done.
Right. It probably helped that, you know, over the course of 9 or 10 nights, we had one set of nurses for 6 of those.
Yeah.
And the other 4, I think we had only 2 sets. So, and then during the day, it was normally the same nurses. So we got to interact and spend time and learn. And that's what one of the nurses, you know, had been having trouble. She actually found out she was going to be adopting the baby, you know, like within a couple of weeks that was about to be born. And that was, you know, and so we got, and she learned it while we were there. And so we got to immediately, you know, sharing that joy with her. But that Friday we had finally invited, you know, the families, you know, had brothers and moms come up, had our pastor come up and baptize them. And then that afternoon, and actually during that, there's a foundation called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, who came in and took photos for us of the baptism. And then in that afternoon, we said okay, and they brought him out, put him in Nicole's arms, and took off the ventilator, and he took one breath and passed away. And then we still got to be the parents and actually, you know, give him a bath and kind of get him dressed for and kind of see and do that. So.
And that was the only time that Nicole ever, did she get to hold him after he was born? No, they don't allow that at that premature.
Size, how quick that was the only time either one of us got to hold him outside of, if they were changing the mat that he laid on. I think once or twice got to very gently lift him up, you know, 2 inches, someone pull out the sheet, put a new sheet in. But otherwise, that was the only time she got to hold him like a mom wants to hold her baby.
Yeah.
So, and then,
And then I'm sure the rest is a blur, as it is.
Yeah, well, so his name was James Richard. I was trying so hard to get my wife to name him James Tiberius because I am a Star Trek fan. And
she wouldn't do it?
If you guys see video, you can't really see it, but over there, that big...
Oh, but we can, and that's all we need to know. Wow.
Yes. There's tons of Star Trek memorabilia there. And so I was trying so hard to get, James Tiberius. We told the nurses, and they loved it. So they actually wrote James Richard and then in parentheses Tiberius for his little NICU cube.
Oh.
One of our friends' boss, who we have never met, we'll probably never meet, heard about it, gave our friend a stuffed animal to give to us, and it was a little lion. So we named that lion Tiberius. But I remember that night after he passed, we just told the family, all right, go home. We'll contact you once we figure out, what we're going to do after. But we just wanted that night to ourselves. And we go home, we grab food on the way, sit down to eat, like, all right, let's watch something on TV. And I don't know why we decided to watch the new, at that point, still was one of the first reboot of Star Trek. And if you haven't seen it, it starts out with a mom going into labor.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, no, fast forward. Okay, we got through that part. We should be able, okay. Well, the second scene is a young teenage boy stealing a car, going for a joyride. He crashes the car, and the cop comes over and goes, what's your name? And he goes, my name's James Tiberius Kirk.
No, stop.
And we're like, we just turned it off at that point. Like, why did we choose that movie? Everything was going to sit there and remind us of James.
Did you take that? So, I mean, it was obviously jarring to hear. Was there a part of you that was like, that's a sign, like, from James, like, to say hello? I mean, like, I would have thought, I mean, yes, it could be really intense to hear in that moment, but...
I think in the moment, there was just so much
shock. It was too much.
He'd just passed 6 hours before. We just wanted something where we could have it on and have no thinking, no emotion, just background for us to just sit there and cope and mourn together.
It's funny that you mentioned that you and your wife going home and watching, a show on TV because Omar and I, the day that Mina died, we came home, we got takeout. And we sat in front of the TV and we watched Family Guy. And I don't know what it was about that episode. Something happened. It was so funny. And Omar and I just laughed so hard. I mean, we were crying, we've been crying all day, it was such a good feeling it was just like this big catharsis. I'll never forget. And I don't even remember what was so funny in Family Guy. I mean, Family Guy's funny. It's very, inappropriate. But it was just, anyway, that just struck a chord with me. So how did you get involved with Kids Joining Eternity? What was that journey like for you?
If I remember correctly, Tamara, another board member,
mm-hmm.
She works for Oklahoma Family Network and works out of Integrus. I think she knew about it and had reached out and probably also told Melanie. And then they reached out to Nicole.
Okay.
I don't remember when, but I know when it happened, Nicole felt a connection of, hey, I'm not alone. You know, we have our friends group. At that point, none of them had experienced really anything like that. So it lets know, okay, you know, it's not, especially as you start, you know, reaching out, finding out, oh, hey, 1 in 4 women and families have gone through this, like, oh, this isn't as uncommon as, you know, it seems. It's just taboo to talk about, so you never, and so she went from having one person who she felt like she could talk to, which is a, you know, best friend's brother's wife who had a stillborn about exactly 7 months before, you know, from only having that to all of a sudden, okay, there's more people I can talk to. There's more, you know, a community I can grieve with. And she also started going to a support group up in North Oklahoma City. And so we just, like, over time started hearing, you know, we had heard about it. And so we went to one of the kickoff meetings, I think in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Do not remember whose story it was, but we listened to that and saw all the families. And I think at that point we just started reaching out of, hey, how can, you know, how can we be involved? You know, because, you know, James is past, he's not here with us, but he still lives in our hearts. And how can we honor his memory by helping others, by doing something to help other people who are going through this?
Yeah.
And so I don't remember if it was the next year or 2 years later, but a few years later, Melanie had asked us to, you know, do that, to share our story at the kickoff event. And then, you know, I got asked, hey, can you join the board? You know, part of it was, you know, need more male representation on the board.
Yeah.
And part of it was, Nicole's a lawyer. She's busy. A lot more busy than I am.
Yeah. Well, it's so great to have, you know, the father's perspective, because as April and I often talk about, dad's side a lot of time gets not left out, but just, it, you know, we focus a lot on the moms and, and rightly so. but it is important.
Yeah.
And, I know that there are so many men out there who are so thankful to have somebody that they can connect with and, that can kind of share in their part of their story as well. Kids joining each other, you're going to be having a little dad's night out soon, no?
Yes, October 27th.
I like how you checked your watch. Like,
yeah,
like,
well,
let me just check it.
Day to make sure I actually, you know, could do the.
Oh, is that one of those smart watches? Sorry,
well, yeah.
I'm 100 years old. I don't know these things.
I mean, I've got an old watch.
Wow.
I've got more watches than I actually work, but.
So that's great. So you said October 27th?
October 27th at 6 p.m. at Topgolf.
So listen up, all you men out there, or wives who are listening, or anyone, you know, tell your nearest male that needs to come, and that'll be really a great time.
Yeah. And like I said, it's dads who have all been there, been through it, you know. Whether you know, knew or, you know, have lost it for years, it never hurts to come out and meet people who have gone through something similar. And
never.
I mean, I'll be honest, most likely we're not going to get all, you know, feely and emotional talking about it. We'll probably end up watching Thursday night football and drinking beer.
Exactly, which is great. I mean, but it's just an opportunity.
Still being around people who you can say, hey, I've had a similar experience, and build a connection and conversation with to dig in deeper over time. So
absolutely. And I feel like it's also one of those situations where it's nice to have a friend who you don't have to say anything to, or you don't have to like bring it up. Like I know with April, it's just like, we, no words need to be said. If somebody's going through, if we're going through something or we have a thought, it's like, you don't even, you know automatically where the other person's coming from. And that's something that's really special. And, it's nice to just have those friends who get it. And, I know
that aren't always trying to find the right words to say.
Exactly.
Sometimes there are no right words. It's just, okay, you're going through something.
Exactly.
You need a ear.
Exactly. So. There, like you said, there's sometimes there's just no right words. I remember I was so, you know, I met April. I was the parent. I was the teacher of one of her kids. And I remember that moment, like sitting in our parent-teacher conference, like, oh my God, like, you know, that. I don't even remember how it came out, but it just, it was one of those things where it was so nice to find like a sister, you know?
Yes.
A sister in misery. No, we're happy. We're happy. No, we're happy people. And, you know, Daniel, I met your wife through a Kids Joining Eternity Mom group.
Yes.
So it's like, it is really great.
You're listening to us now.
Yeah. It's just a great opportunity to meet people. So I hope that not only do you come out to the dad's fun night of beer and Top Golf and sports talking on October 27th, but also that you join me on my mom's night out. You know, it's the first Wednesday of every month. So, stay on the social media pages. Again, I sound 100 years old to find out those dates and stuff, but it's at the Collective at 6:30, and it's super fun. The first Wednesday of every month. Okay, I did my plug. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on. I really loved hearing your story, and happy birthday.
Oh, of course. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Daniel. Thank you again. Yes. This has been April and Sydney for the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. Thank you for helping us to break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. If you or someone you know needs resources or support, please visit our website at kidsjoiningeternity.org.
Thank you for listening to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. For more information, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.